I'm Mark Halsall, editor of Spud Smart Magazine and SpudSmart.com. This Spud Smart podcast, brought to you by McCain Foods, features Dr. Rick Peters. Dr. Peters is an agricultural and agri-food Canada research scientist based in Charlottetown, Prince Edward Island. He's one of Canada's leading experts on potato diseases. We asked Dr. Peters to share his insights into the issues surrounding seed potato decay caused by various pathogens, which can have a significant impact on crop emergence, vigor, and ultimately yield. Dr. Peters, the two major soil-borne diseases that can cause seed decay in potatoes are Fusarium dry rot and bacterial soft rot. Can you tell us about how each of these pathogens can infect potatoes?
At the harvest time, you can get nicks and cuts and so on your tubers going into storage from the harvest and handling process. And those nicks and cuts are wounds that allow Fusarium to enter. And that Fusarium is really harbored in the soil that's around the tubers. There's spores that are present in most of our fields. And they can then, with a wound, have an opportunity to infect. And, when those tubers enter storage, the infection is usually quite small and then develops during the winter period in storage, so that by the time you're ready to bring those out, to get ready for planting, there can be quite significant dry rot. You have to think about a lot of these things, in the year before. Bacterial soft rot, on the other hand, is more of an issue when you're cutting your tuber at the seed, cutting your seed ready for planting. You are then placing that seed into a soil where these bacteria live, and they're very ubiquitous. You'd find them in most of our soils. And in the right conditions of moistures and usually a warmer spring, the bacteria can move in very quickly on that cut surface and cause decay. So it's pretty ubiquitous on the seed and the soil. You can get soft rot in storage, so there's a soft rot bacteria around the seed during the winter, and it's also very common in the soil.
How do these types of seed rot affect crop emergence?
Yeah, those organisms are just there, either in the wound as the seed is cut, or already established in the case of Fusarium in storage, so it's being expressed that's planting in spring. And then that basically, when you put that seed piece in the ground, cover it up, you then have usually a couple of weeks before things emerge, so there's a time where these organisms can then break that seed piece down. You plant into a situation where the pathogens have been able to gain a hold on your seed, and you're planting in a situation often where perhaps it's cooler and wetter, kind of a more difficult spring, you might say. Mm-hmm. So the crop is delayed in emerging, so there's even more time for these pathogens to work on the seed piece in the soil. And then the most serious condition is if that seed completely rots and you get a miss in the field. Those misses are, even 10% of your plants, that's a huge yield impact. And perhaps not enough to incite replanting, but enough to cause a yield impact at the end of the season. There's been cases where it's so severe that a grower actually has to replant the entire field, and obviously that's got a huge cost. And of course you're planting later, so you're delaying the whole window of opportunity of your growing season to grow a crop, so you're impacting yield that way as well. So that's a huge issue, and I've seen cases like that.
Rhizoctonia is another common fungal disease that's both seed and soil-borne, which can cause black scurf in potatoes. This pathogen not only affects crop emergence, but also plant vigor. How does this affect yield?
Say maybe more subtle instances where, especially with Rhizoctonia, when the sprouts are pruned or the plant is attacked before it emerges, and it does emerge, but it's a weaker plant, there's less vigorous plant, and you don't notice it as a miss, but in general it's a little more stunted and will not yield as well as other plants. So in those situations, like I said, they're often a little more subtle, but they do rob you of yield, and that's very common with the case of Rhizoctonia, and sometimes too with Fusarium, when the seed doesn't completely break down, and you'll get weaker plants that do come up. If you're going through and there's issues of some misses and some loss of vigor, I've seen situations that have approached 50% yield loss in some very significant categories. But I would say it's very common you have about a 10% hit based on a lot of these more subtle loss of vigor situations when you're dealing with these soil-borne issues.
Is the problem with these pathogens getting worse? And if so, why?
It's been more significant in recent years. And one of the key factors that's driven that is fungicide resistance. So for years, we've had various seed treatments that growers use to control some of these decay pathogens, as well as some of these organisms like Rhizoctonia that can infest the surface of seeds. So there have been a number of seed treatments available for growers to manage these diseases. But in the last decade, and increasingly in the last 4 or 5 years, we've seen a rapid expansion of fungicide resistance across the country. And that's particularly in the Fusarium pathogen. So we've seen our key dry rot and seed decay pathogens, which are Fusarium sambucinum, Fusarium ceruleum, and Fusarium avenaceum, the three different species of Fusarium. We've seen some, particularly in sambucinum and ceruleum, some very key resistance and resistant strains across the country. We've been kind of tracking this with surveys across the country in the last number of years and seeing how this has expanded. And we've certainly got examples of cases where growers have had very serious seed decay issues because of fungicide resistance. Now, fortunately, in the last couple of years, we've had a couple of new products, which are liquid seed treatments registered in Canada. And those treatments contain new chemistries, one of which is difenoconazole, which so far we haven't seen any resistance to. So growers that have problems with resistant strains to some of the older chemistries now have some new tools that can manage some of these resistant strains. So that's been encouraging. We've seen these new products really help bridge that gap of fungicide resistance. Of course, we have to make sure we use resistance management strategies now to keep some of these newer products in the system as long as possible before resistance develops again to some of these newer chemistries. And we're certainly tracking that again across the country to see whether we start to see some strains that are resistant to some of these newer products. So far we haven't, but it's only been a couple of years since they've been used. So we're continuing that work to track some of these strains across Canada. So we really want to monitor that closely to see if we're starting to lose efficacy with any of our current treatments. Because as soon as that happens, it can happen quite quickly, and a resistant strain can quite quickly become predominant in a population, and you can quickly lose efficacy of your treatments in a matter of a year or two. And we really want to try to be proactive and try to detect these resistant strains early on before we start to see more widespread loss of efficacy of these products.
Yes, and we know growers need to be proactive too. What can they do to avoid resistance occurring with these new chemistries?
That's a good question, and it's something we think about a lot. And one of the key things to consider is how often you're using a product in the program. So, rotating products and or using combinations of products, mixing up the game is really important. Some of these chemistries are available not only as seed treatments, but also as foliar or post-harvest products. And if you're using it several times throughout your growing cycle, that can be a concern for developing resistant strains of some of these pathogens. The more often you're using something, the more chance there is of organisms starting to develop resistance. So trying to limit their use and only targeting the use where it's most effective for you, whether it's a seed treatment or a foliar or a post-harvest, you know, that fits best in your program, is an important thing to think about. So anytime you're rotating products or combining products with more broad spectrum products, that can be helpful in managing disease resistance.
Well, what about other strategies for fighting these diseases that don't rely on chemicals? What are some of these, and what makes them an important management tool?
You know, a lot of these non-chemical approaches to disease control are really important. So when I think about Rhizoctonia, for example, it's both seed-borne and soil-borne. Well, managing the disease in the soil can include things like crop rotations, a lot of these newer crops that are entering our rotations, like your mustards and buckwheats for wireworm management or other, tools for managing other situations, can really be helpful for managing slow-borne disease too. And we've got a number of trials where we've shown significant disease reduction when using brassica crops as green manures in a rotation, or even as a rotation crop itself. And sorghum sedan grass is another example. And you can really reduce the level of pathogens in the soil with some of these rotations and soil amendments and green manure. So that type of thing can really be helpful. Really, to get a good management of Rhizoctonia, you got to manage it on the seed and in the soil. If you only do one of those two things, you won't be successful. You really have to manage it both. Fusarium can be soil-borne. However, from our research, we found that the seed is the most critical component of Fusarium decay. So managing Fusarium at harvest into storage can be a huge help with developing clean seed for use at planting. Having clean seed is a huge factor. If you start off with a good seed source that's clean from some of these pathogens, you really get yourself started on the right foot, and that can be hugely important. And then when you think about the whole planting process, if you're cutting seed, well, that's a wound that you're creating, which opens yourself to invasion by a number of pathogens. While disinfecting your knives during the cutting process periodically can be helpful, so you're not spreading spores to healthy seed. Also, making sure your seed is stored in a dry, well-ventilated situation before planting, so that you're not getting rot in the pile as you're moving the seed out to be planted. And just general management of the seed piece is hugely important in reducing seed decay. So with a lot of these seed decay pathogens, they really like moisture. You know, one of the aspects that we stress to growers is, if possible, and obviously it's not always possible to control your planting conditions, but if you have a somewhat drier conditions and conditions that will really stimulate rapid emergence before the seed decays, that can be very helpful. So you're getting that crop out of there before the seed starts to rot, and of course that ends up being a miss in the field. The worst case scenario is planting infected seed in a cool, wet soil, which delays emergence and allows more time for the pathogens to decay that seed piece. So anything you can do to either delay planting a little bit until the weather improves, for example, and again, making sure your seed pieces are stored in a good, dry, ventilated situation so that you're not getting rot in storage before you're planting, those can be critical. Bacteria, we don't have really any treatments to manage bacteria like we do for fungi. So the key for bacteria is about controlling the conditions. Bacteria love moisture and they love warmth. So anything you can do to dry things down, you'll benefit yourself with reducing bacterial soft rot. So once those break down in storage, they can spill bacteria through or to adjacent tubers around them in the storage. And that way you get bacteria coating various tubers that don't necessarily look rotten, but have the bacteria around them. Uh-huh. And that way you can also, when during the cutting process, you're creating wounds, and those bacteria can then be spread to those cut surfaces. And that's why disinfection, not only of the storages, but of the cutting surfaces, the blades and so on during cutting, is important to prevent a lot of that spread. And then planting in a situation that's not too wet is also helpful. We really have to think about a lot of these non-chemical approaches as being critical to help not only with resistance management, but with the overall management of seed decay and disease.
Going back to seed treatments for a moment, excess moisture can also be a concern when using the new liquid fungicide products. Can you expand on that?
When you're applying some of these products, moisture is key too. So now that we're using liquid treatments, sure, they can control some of our fungi, but if you're putting too much moisture on your seed, your bacteria can start to be a problem. So volumes, water volumes, how much you're putting on, as well as the conditions that you can then dry the seed in after applications, are really important as well to prevent things that are too wet going into the soil, which can give you problems with bacteria. So there's a lot of issues to consider. It's a complex system in the soil after planting, and well, the whole planting management of seed and so on is complex. So there's lots of different factors, not just the weather to consider, but the the wounds that are created, how to manage those wounds, how to disinfect things properly, how to use the seed treatments that'll work for you, etc. So that's to consider.
Very good. Thank you so much, Dr. Peters, for your insights and your time today. I'd like to thank our listeners and our podcast sponsor, McCain Foods. Founded by farmers and proud to invest in Canadian farmers, families, and communities for almost 60 years. Make sure to visit spudsmart.com to subscribe to future podcasts.